Network all across America, 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
We'll get to that. If you'd like to get on board, drivers, we'd love to hear from you, 800-288-9227. Ask the Law. It is the very first Ask the Law program of 2009 for January 5th, 2009. And we have retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial from the Texas Highway Patrol. He is here every first Monday for Ask the Law, brought to you by Oblue USA. And the information and answers are up to date, can change without notice. CMP drivers can also get help at askthelaw.org. Get on board now. We'll open up the lines at 800-288-9227 if you have a question about regulations. Maybe your company is telling you one thing, but you believe the law says this, the regulations say this.
No, that never happens.
Well, yeah, that never happens. Well, get on board at 800-288-9227. Let's do kind of a perspective on your career. 30 years there behind the badge.
Yeah.
And you retired not too long ago.
August 31st.
You know, it seems, you know, when you say August 31st, of course, here we are expecting a little bit of ice on the roads maybe in North Texas tonight. And you say August 31st, and that seems like, you know, eons ago, but when we talk about your retirement, it seems like you just retired.
Yes.
But 30 years behind the badge as a commercial vehicle enforcement officer. And we have heard a lot of these common, I guess, miscommunications, misinformation that's out there, which is why we do Ask the Law program and have done it for years, and now it's a monthly feature. What would you say in the later years was the biggest thing that drivers were doing wrong? Was the biggest piece of misinformation that they had behind the wheel?
Well, a lot of it was the fact that drivers would listen to the CB radio, and there would be another driver that would come across as an expert or a know-it-all.
Yeah, like and, me.
And so, the guys get it behind the wheel, and, you know, they will follow each other for hours.
Right.
And just to pass the time around, you know, they'll get to talking about this and get to talking about that and whatever.
Right.
And,
right.
And invariably somebody always comes up that seems to know more than the other one.
Right.
And so the biggest thing that I found was driver listening, not too sure of the regulations himself, but he would always listen to another driver.
Right.
He had no clue who this driver was other than by CB handle in a truck going down the road or at a truck stop. And so they would sit there, and that was probably one of the biggest things that I found was miscommunication or misunderstanding what the regulations were.
I think if I were to bring up one topic that was the biggest piece of misinformation, that would be what the officer has a right to do when you're on the side of the road with that officer. In other words, a lot of drivers would ask, like, the question, do I have a few minutes? How long do I have to bring my logbook up to date when that officer asks for that logbook? The answer is?
The driver has to be current to his last change.
Okay.
One of the things that I always did in the years that I was working, I would never take the logbook from the driver.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, I did not want to lose it.
Right.
And then turn around and have to be the bad guy and write him a ticket because he didn't have a logbook. So, you know.
Wow, that's the ultimate CYA.
Well, yeah. And so what I would do is
have a logbook. I just gave it to you. Well, I can't find it, and I'm going to write you a ticket for it.
So, you know, one of the things that I would always do is say, okay, driver, let me see your logbook.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could always tell whenever they started hem-hawing around about this and about that, you know, that it wasn't current.
Right.
And my question, you know, and my response would just let me look at it.
Right.
I just want to see what your last entry is.
Yeah.
And I always carried a little piece of paper, notebook around with me, and I would jot it down.
Sure.
And if the driver was really far behind, I would say, look, while I'm doing the inspection on the truck, go ahead and start working on your logbook.
Yeah.
Get it caught up.
Yeah.
But, I know that, from time to time we get, questions submitted to Ask the Law and from California.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, California, a lot of people don't understand, they do not enforce the DOT regulations.
Mm.
They enforce state law.
Okay.
Everything is under state law. Well, in California, under state law, you have to be within 2 hours
mm-hmm.
of your last entry. Under the federal regulations, you have to be current to your last change. So as long as a driver can draw a horizontal line,
right.
he can be 7, 8, 9 hours behind,
mm-hmm.
and his log is current.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he starts making vertical lines, his logbook is no longer current.
Mm.
So that is, you know, one of the things that through the years I've seen that, and the driver don't want to show me because it's not current. I don't care. Let me look at it.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll let you get it caught up.
Yeah, because it tends to be, and I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I was talking about, well, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. In other words, it's and we were just talking about having children, and it's, you know, that the child has done something wrong, and then they lie about it. It really isn't what they did, you know, wrong in the first place wasn't a big deal, but they lied about it. So it's really not the crime, it's cover up. If you start hem hawing around and then refuse to get the log over, that looks worse than just handing the log over and say, you know, listen, I'm sorry, I just forgot to make the last entry. My last change was this. I can tell you any information you need to know and just cooperate as much as you can on the side of the road. That would be my advice to any driver, because you're not going to have that person wearing that badge is not a judge, I think, but they do have the ability to make decisions there on the side.
So, but it's interesting because when you talk about that, California is different than the DOT. So the fact is drivers have to be familiar with what states want.
Yes.
Because you can be abiding the law all the way across the country, and all of a sudden you come into California and you're not abiding by the law anymore.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's and you know, in California is so strange anyway. We get so many calls, but we get calls and comments by email about, you know, this state does this, that state does that. This really does, you know, go back to and something we talked about last hour, and that was, you know what those rules are for each individual state. It's not important just to have that. That FMCSA handbook, but you're going to need to have a good knowledge of what goes on in your state, whether you are an intrastate driver or you just frequent that state.
Correct.
Because there are things that go on, you know, I mean, in New Mexico, it's different from Louisiana and Michigan and California. California is, you know, most drivers tell me is like a country in and of itself, and we know a lot about that because we talk about the regulations that come about with California Air Resources Board and others. Another one was, and this kind of is the same line of thinking here, is how much access does a commercial vehicle enforcement officer have on the side of the road to my cab? If he wants to see inside that cab, how much access does he have the right to? Can he get in and start going through everything? Can he get in and just look around, or can he get in at all?
He can get in, because one of the things that he is going to check for is to make sure that the sleeper berth that the driver has complies with the regulations found in 393.76.
Right.
So he has the right to get in there to make sure that it's the right dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
He has the right to make sure that you have bed clothing,
mm.
That you have some type of restraint system.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he can get in and make sure that the sleeper berth meets the requirements of the regulations.
Yeah.
Now, he cannot get in there and start opening up cubby holes,
right,
and looking for, you know, if you have, you might be carrying some contraband or whatever. He
right.
cannot get in there and do a search to try to find that unless he gets consent, usually written or verbal consent from the driver to open up cubby holes and stuff like that.
Right. Now, if there is, does probable cause come into that? If, let's say, he smells something or he sees something that looks out of place, from where he's standing on the side of the road next to that vehicle, if he maybe, you know, smells some contraband or alcohol or whatever it may be.
Yeah, if he's...
Does probable cause come into play?
Yes, if he opens up the door and he's climbing in and all of a sudden he gets a strong odor of marijuana.
Yeah.
Now he has established probable cause and he can continue on and do a more thorough search based upon the probable cause.
Yeah, that's based on the Willie Nelson Law of 2009.
Yeah.
Driving through Louisiana, or was it Mississippi? I forgot which one it was.
Hillsborough, Texas,
yeah,
I think.
Hillsborough.
Hillsborough.
But as far as, you know, if he does not have a probable cause, then no, he cannot go and go beyond checking to make sure that the sleeper compartment meets the regulations.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and we'll talk some more about that and also maybe look ahead to more of 2009, see what we're in for. Here we are, our very first Ask the Law for 2009. If you want to get on board, drivers, we welcome your calls at 800-288-9227. Maybe you've had an incident and had a question about it. Maybe your company is telling you something and you had a question about that regulation. Maybe your safety manager is telling you one thing, but you believe the law is different. Let's see if we can't clear that up for you this morning here on the program. And we'll talk more about some of the most common questions we've had over the years here on the program as well, and there are plenty of them. So we'll get to that, and weather along the highways at 33 Pass
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network. And Ask the Law, 800-288-9227 for this January 5th. Gary McNamara, Eric Harley.
And we are with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. Ask the Law, a service of Old Blue USA. All the answers are up to date and can change without notice. You can also go to askthelaw.org. If you want to get on board, drivers, we're here for you, as we are every first Monday of the month, at 800-288-9227.
Let's talk to John and I-30. John, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network, and you're on Ask the Law with Trooper Dial. Welcome. Hi.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
I got the question for him. Is there a grace period on our HIPAA stickers being stuck on our trucks since they expired, you know, 31st of January?
If the sticker on the truck is not required to be there, it's the fuel permit that you have to have.
Ah.
If the sticker is actually there to let the other states, as an example, if you're on Interstate 30 and you're headed up to Arkansas, you know, they've got the POEs up there. And as you pull through, they'll have people in there that are monitoring to see whether or not you have a current sticker or not. And that's all that is just to expedite the driver getting through the POE checks.
Okay.
So you, what you need to have is the actual permit itself.
Okay. I appreciate it, sir. Y'all good night.
Thank you so much.
John,
do appreciate the call at 800-288-9227. Drivers, if you would like to get through, we welcome your calls at 800-288-9227. And I don't want to put you on the spot here, any major laws as of January 1st that you can think of that stick out in our part of the country or that you're aware of that drivers need to be aware of? I didn't see anything that came across the wires as of January 1st.
No, right now the big thing is FMCSA is tying the medical card to your CDL. And a lot of the states have until, I believe it's 2012, to get that implemented. Also, FMCSA is working on having a national registry of approved doctors.
Right.
That will do the actual DOT physical.
Right, and this is something that's been going on they've kind of been working on this for quite some time.
Yes.
Because we know that we, in fact, talked about this over the summer, where Congress was talked about the concerns with the DOT physicals and how some drivers were getting around it, and they were using doctors that weren't maybe qualified or whatever the case may be. But ultimately, their concern with Congress was there were too many unfit drivers on the road.
Well, it I don't know that it came from Congress as much as it came from NTSB's list, top 10 list.
Right, right.
And apparently when they go in and do these big crashes,
right,
that's one of the things that they're finding is drivers have either expired medicals or the driver is unfit.
Yeah, and you're right. That's where Congress got it from. That's where it all started, is from that NTSB study. And their data that was coming out, which, you know, was kind of concerning, and we had took calls on it that night. Drivers were saying that they were, you know, they had certain ways of getting their DOT physical taken care of, but that will all come to an end very soon if they have their way about it. Stand by. More with Monty in just a moment on the Midnight Radio Network. Network, 800-288-9227, and Ask the Law. Gary McNamara along with Eric Carley. And it is Ask the Law for January 5th, 2009. We are here live with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. And Ask the Law brought to you by Old Blue USA. The information is up to date, can change without notice. You can always get information at askthelaw.org. Drivers, if you want to get on board, 800-288-9227. I had one caller during the break, BW, with a very, very frequent question. We'll get to that here in just a moment. Let's get to the calls first. 800-288-9227.
Let's talk to Harold. Harold, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network, and you're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
How do?
Hey.
Good.
Hey, Mr. Dial.
Yes, sir.
I've got a question. It's a safety issue. I'm sure I've met you before. The last one I dealt with, Dexter Cox, up there in Gainesville. But
yeah.
I know we can't pull triples in Texas, even though Dugan got away with it one time. But the plunger system, the pendle hook and plunger system.
Okay.
Is that plunger required to be operational?
Yes.
Okay. A buddy said he called up. Y'all, and they said it's not, or our safety department said it's not a safety issue. But that plunger has to come out.
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty much all I need to know.
All right. Quick and to the point. Do appreciate it.
The buddy on the CB.
Yeah, the plunger has to come out. That's, my wife has said that to me, I don't know, countless times. The plunger has to come out. Just get back in the bathroom and finish your work, plumber boy. All right, we had a question. BW called earlier and didn't hang around with us, but this is, gosh, this, I think, is one of the hottest questions that we get and over the years. It is about handguns and carrying guns in general. Is there any federal law prohibiting a driver from carrying a handgun inside a commercial motor vehicle?
Not under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration regulations. There is nothing in those regs that addresses that. Recently, a lot of the states have gone in to a concealed handgun permit or license.
Right.
If you are licensed in your home state, then you can carry in a state that has reciprocity with your home state. If you go into a state that does not have reciprocity, or you do not have a concealed handgun permit or license, you can still transport a firearm under the old ATF, Alcohol Tobacco Firearms Rule.
Right.
Which means you can carry it, but the gun has to be unloaded, has to be properly stored, and the ammunition has to be in a separate container.
All right. I think that is probably the biggest misnomer, is that a lot of drivers believe that there's something in the FMCSA handbook that deals with handguns.
Yeah, no, there's nothing. There's nothing in the DOT regs that addresses whether you can or you cannot carry any type of weapon in a commercial vehicle.
Right.
So it's the state law which dictates whatever what you can do.
Whatever
correct.
State you're in.
Yes.
Which
right.
basically yeah. is kind of like having a conceal and carry license if you are a resident of a state that has a conceal and carry law and you have a conceal and carry license.
Yes.
Then whatever that reciprocity state you're in, if there is a reciprocity with your state, then, you know, it applies. So the same is true here. It's essentially whatever state you're in at the time.
Yes.
Those laws apply.
Yes. As an example, if you're from Texas and you have a concealed handgun permit, then you can carry in any one of the states that Texas has entered into a reciprocity with. So you would be treated as a Texas citizen in that state,
right,
if you have a concealed handgun permit and you are carrying a concealed handgun.
800-288-9227.
Let's talk to Tom. Tom, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network, and you're on Ask the Law with Trooper Dial. Welcome. Hi.
Hi. How you doing? I have a question about the sleeper berth rule.
Yes, sir.
Now, once I go in there, am I required to spend without leaving a certain amount of time, or am I allowed to go in there 3 hours, get up for 10, 15 minutes, come back, or do I have to stay in that berth for... I'm just curious how that law works.
Well, okay, first off, Tom, let me ask you this. Are you going to be down for your 10-hour break?
Yes.
Okay. When I go and do and help RJ do the truck shows, he has a big diagram that has a log page on it. And one of the examples that I show is you pull into a truck stop and you're fixing to shut down for your 10-hour break. The first hour or first 2 hours, you're taking care of your laundry, you're getting a shower, you're getting right. something to eat. You go to the sleeper berth, and you get in that sleeper berth, and you're in the sleeper berth for an hour. Then all okay. of a sudden, you get a pain, and you've got to go to the restroom. So you go to the restroom, and you do this for the next 7 hours, back and forth, back and forth. You have got your 10-hour break. Because option 3 allows you to combine sleeper berth and off duty for 10 hours, and that's your 10-hour break.
As long as I'm not moving.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
All right, Tom.
There you go.
Thanks so much.
And there's another one. And we're kind of going over some of the most common questions and kind of a perspective of your career and also your affiliation with us and Ask the Law over the years and some of the most common questions and the misinformation that's out there. Because I've said this time and time again, even without the changes that we've gone through in the recent years, I say recent, but since 2003, with the hours of service rule and other regulations, we would still have a lot of questions about even the old hours of service
yes.
rule. In fact, we did ask the law before the hours of service rule ever changed.
Yes, we did.
And so that, I think, is one of the another common question, and that is, can I break it up? And essentially, if you're not called to duty for any reason to have to do anything, you know, as far as equipment-wise with that truck or move that truck or anything else, then you can kind of come in and out of that sleeper berth during that 10-hour period, right?
Yes, that okay. is very true. And going even taking it a step further, one of the questions that we get asked quite often mm-hmm. on Ask the Law is I'm down for my 34-hour break.
Right.
And about, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 hours into it, all of a sudden I realized that the reefer trailer is fixing to run out of fuel. Well, now then I've got to get behind the wheel, drive around to the fuel island, and put some fuel in the reefer unit.
Right.
Well, guess what? You just broke your 34-hour reset.
Mm. Yeah, that, you know, and again, I think that's where we talk about having to do something with that truck. But, you know, if you do anything that is essentially part of the duty of that truck,
yes.
and fueling that truck or taking care of that reefer or servicing that truck in any way is part of your duty for that truck.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are saying, well, yeah, I can just sit there and I won't show it. Well, that's fine and dandy. The guy on the side of the road may not be able to take and prove that. But at the same time, if one of the federal auditors or a state auditor goes in and does a compliance review on the company, one of the things that we're going to ask for is fuel receipts.
Right.
And all of a sudden now I've got a fuel receipt at such and such a location, and I compare that to your logbook, and now then all of a sudden you're showing me on a 34-hour break, and
yeah,
I've got a fuel receipt right here.
Right in the middle of that 34-hour break, yeah.
So, yeah, you may beat the guy on the side of the road,
yeah,
but you're not going to beat the guy that comes in and does the compliance review.
There's where you get caught. All right, more with Trooper Monty Dial on Ask the Law in just a moment.
On the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law, 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
And we are here with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. I think we have one more question we can get to before we let Trooper Dial go get some rest. 800-288-9227.
Sorry for interrupting you.
That's
we go to Ronnie and I-10. Ronnie, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law with Monty Dial.
How
welcome.
You doing?
Good.
Hey, I'd like to find out when they're going to start the U.S. government or Texas Highway Patrol or the Highway Patrols all over the country are going to start buckling down on them guys from California that don't even speak English.
You mean professional drivers?
Well, it's supposed to be, but most of them guys are illegal. And,
well, and that's,
you know, a lot of them are.
Yeah. What would happen in the event, Trooper Dial, when you were on the job, if someone, it turned out that someone behind the wheel was illegal?
Well, first off, one, we have to establish that he does have a valid license, either from Mexico, if he is traveling with a load that originated in Mexico and is coming into the United States, then they will allow him to operate with the Mexican CDL.
And by the way, Texas has had that agreement before the
yes.
current NAFTA agreement that's
right.
in place with Mexican drivers.
The next thing is the driver has to reasonably communicate with law enforcement.
All right.
If law enforcement walks up and asks him a question and you get the deer in the headlight look, that is a out of service item.
Wow.
The driver is immediately taken off of the road.
Okay, so I'm going to clear this up before Ronnie leaves, because Ronnie was making the impression that you guys are letting people slide.
Oh, no, we're not letting them slide a bit.
Yeah. It's just a matter of having the manpower out there to enforce it.
Yes.
So, I think every state, I mean, frankly, when it comes to enforcing any law, you would have to have a much higher ratio. We're talking, you know, probably trillions of dollars countrywide to make something like that happen. They're just, Texas is a huge state, so is California.
Right.
And there's, you know, a lot of land out there to cover.
But, yes, that is very true. But in our day-to-day contact with drivers, if they are an interstate driver, and we walk up and strike up a conversation and he cannot reasonably communicate under CVSA's out of service criteria, that driver is immediately put out of the truck.
Great. Listen, thanks to Old Blue USA and RJ Taylor, and thank you, Trooper Dial. We'll talk to you next month.
Yes.
All right. And top of the hour news on the way
on the Midnight Radio Network.